Today's conversation is with creative and my dear friend, Dorte DeJesus. Dorte worked as an art director for boutique design studios and magazines such as Elle Germany before she launched the independent, mindful fashion publication Lissom in spring 2016. Since then, Lissom has organically grown into a core team in Berlin and an even wider international community of writers, photographers, and stylists. Its first annual print edition was launched in December of this year, 2019, and presents a new holistic vision on what sustainable fashion could be. We chat about Dorte's journey, the launch of Lissom magazine, the importance of beauty for the sustainability movement, plus so much more.
Spirit of Design delves deep into the unseen elements of design and holistic sustainability.
Join us, Amy and
Anya,
for open conversations with creatives, scholars, activists, and others to envision alternative design futures that are diverse, inclusive, community-centric, and in symbiosis with all life on this planet.
Hi, Dorte. Thank you so, so much for joining me today for this casual conversation we're going to have around sustainable design and beauty. It's been such a huge, huge pleasure of mine getting to know you this year and being a part of the work that you are doing in sustainability and fashion with your magazine. And this conversation has been a long time coming, I think, and I'm just so excited for us to be sharing these thoughts together today. So thank you so much for taking the time today to talk to me.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me onto your podcast. I'm happy to be here today.
You are so, so welcome. We're really excited, both Amy and I, to hear some of your perspectives around beauty and design and sustainability and whatever else may come up. That's so important for us to be talking about in these crazy times. So the first question that I'd love to ask you is, could you perhaps take us on a little bit of a journey about yourself, your life, your background? How did you get into sustainable fashion and start this magazine? What was your journey like? Have you always been interested in sustainability? I'm sure this is something a lot of people would love to know about. Amy and I definitely do. So if you could take us on that journey, that would be wonderful.
Well, I will try. Where do I even start? I originally come from the very north of Germany. I grew up in rural northern Germany, actually not far away from Denmark. So my childhood was not far from the sea. It's a region called Dithmarschen. It's mainly farmland, and it's a very like wide, barren landscape. Like super flat, you can see for miles, and there are no like beautiful rolling hills. It's just like flat green grassland and sheep and dikes and like quite wild stormy sea. Yeah, so that's kind of how I spent my childhood, a very nature-based childhood, I would say. And I think I always kind of had a relationship with fashion, but more in the form of I loved dressing up. Like I loved playing dress up. I remember I had this magic box in my house, and it was basically all sorts of like old clothes and stuff and things. And I would get it out and I would dress up, but like, you know, not like pretty dress up, like wanting to look like a glamorous woman or anything, more like being really creative. And I also did that with all my friends. I think, it's been a very creative, playful childhood I had. And it's always sort of been with me. Later on, like after school, I moved to London after I did my A-levels. I lived in London for a year. That was in the late 90s. Then a year later, I moved to Berlin where I studied. Initially, I started studying history and art history, mainly for the reason I chose those subjects, because I thought by studying them, they would help me to understand what life is all about, the secret of the world. I don't know. But I studied it for 2 years. And I really missed just working with my hands and being creative. And then I decided that, yeah, I wanted to do work that allowed me to be more expressive. And I moved over to study communication design. So I didn't study fashion. I also never really had an inkling to study fashion, but it was still always with me because I loved creating imagery. And in this creation of imagery, like clothing was also always present. So after my studies, I moved to Lisbon for a year, and then I moved back to Berlin. It's quite a rough time because I really graduated into the big financial crisis of 2008. So it's a bit disorientating. But back in Berlin, I started working as first a designer and then art director of a small design company. I worked on a magazine called Electronic Beats, which was about lifestyle and also fashion topics. And then later I moved to Munich and I worked for Elle magazine for a good 2 years. And I think, I guess ironically, it was at Elle magazine where my interest for sustainability in fashion really kind of came to the front. Not because of Elle magazine and like the thoughts that surrounded me. I think it was more like what I saw and what I was in really made me question the industry. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed being at Elle. Like I had really fabulous colleagues. I really loved working there. But at the same time, I just became more and more troubled what I was seeing. I mean, I kind of knew it when I went in. It wasn't that I went in there naively, but just seeing how images were retouched, how a certain kind of female beauty was being promoted, how women were kind of kept in a state of anxiety of like being beautiful enough or being good enough or like having to conform to certain standards. I could even see how it was sort of trickling into my being, and that was quite scary. And at the same time, I also became just a lot more aware of how responsible I am as a communication designer and art director for the kind of imagery that we bring out or that I bring out into the world. And I think that's where my journey started. And I really wanted to know more about the fashion industry, how clothing was produced. And that's when I really started to dig into my own research, I guess.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And it's so interesting to hear your journey. Could you tell us a little bit more perhaps about how you started to do your own research and what your own research was looking at?
Yeah, sure. Like, I think actually my Well, I think it was two things. First of all, I read a book by Kate Fletcher, Design Journeys, that really gave me a good overview about the life cycle of fashion and clothing, like all the different problems sort of connected to the industry. And I also started, well, it came a little bit later, actually. I think initially I started to look out for brands. I mean, that was in 2015, I guess. But I started to look around for brands that produce sustainably. I did research for brands that I thought did beautiful clothing, but also had good provenance. And initially, I didn't find very much. Like when I Googled, I found certain like bigger, more well-known brands, but nothing that really thrilled me on an aesthetic level, I guess. And that was also when I started going on Instagram. And Instagram at the time, I think at the time was also different. It's like developed so fast and became so big in the last years. But I think even back in 2015, 4 or 5 years ago, you could still, by digging deep, find sort of smaller brands doing really interesting stuff. But I didn't have the feeling at the time that they had a big following yet. So it was really like going through rabbit holes and finding brands that for me combined skillful making and beautiful design. And then a bit later, like in mid-2015, I left Munich and I moved to London. I moved to London to live with my boyfriend, who lived on a houseboat on Regent's Canal, very beautiful. And I joined him, and that's when I started my own online magazine. I mean, at the time, it was tiny. It was just basically me on a very simple website, starting to write first articles and interviews, well, mainly interviews, really. And I think that was another important step of my self-education. Like having a blog kind of allowed me to get in touch with these small brands that I had discovered and ask them for interviews. So actually my first interviews happened in New York. I was traveling with a friend of mine, and I did an interview with Deborah Alden at the Brooklyn Fashion and Design Accelerator, a really beautiful place that was kind of helping small sustainable fashion businesses to grow, to like work in a sustainable way, but also become like financially sustainable. I think unfortunately they closed their doors this year. Real shame. And I also started getting in touch with designers there. Like I did an interview with Nettie Kent, an ethical jewelry designer from Brooklyn. And yeah, that kind of really kicked off the journey into what's now become Listen Magazine. And yeah, what was your original question? I feel I've been talking and now I've lost track.
No, that's perfect. Thank you so much sharing that. It's quite funny as well. We have a similar experience, because Design Journeys by Kate Fletcher was the first book in sustainable fashion that I was actually introduced to as well by someone. So it's quite interesting, the synchronicities there between us. And yeah, it sounded like quite a magical time for you, moving to London and living on a houseboat and having, I guess, almost like a container to start to really, source and develop your ideas around what you saw wasn't being shown in sustainable fashion.
Mm.
I thought it was interesting how you shared that at Elle magazine when you were working there, and continuing on from that point, that you noticed, I guess, these alternative
I would say, the mainstream ideals of what beauty are, and that you started feeling a little bit uneasy about that. And I'd love for you to perhaps share with us, what does beauty look like to you? You know, in this world, as you touched upon, in this world where fashion magazines, society in general, Instagram, there is really one quite linear perspective on what beauty is, and it is usually commodified as well as the feminine and marketed to us in very particular standardizations of what is beautiful and what isn't. What does beauty look like to you, and what does it mean to you?
Yeah, it's a big question that I've asked myself many times. I guess I think beauty's always been something that had a deep fascination for me in my life. It's something I've always felt drawn to and moved by. I guess I have early moments that I can recall. Like I remember at school, for example, I must have been maybe 7, 8 years old. It was in elementary school. We went to a museum with my class, and I saw a painting by Caspar David Friedrich, the monk by the sea. I think, I'm not sure if that's the correct English title. And I remember looking at it as a child, and just seeing this vastness of the sea and this small monk standing by the sea. And I'm not really sure what I thought as a child anymore, but I just saw it and I was really swept away by it. And I had the feeling I'm seeing something of importance. Yeah, how can I say? I think it's there has been a lot of moments like this in my life. And about a year ago, I listened to a really beautiful podcast on being with Krista Tippett. And she was in conversation with the Irish poet and philosopher, John O'Donoghue. And they were also talking about beauty, like his very important subject. And he was making a difference. He was saying what we are seeing as beauty in our society, in our Western society today, is in fact glamour. And I thought that was a very interesting notion. So yeah, when I listened to the conversation, I could really strongly connect with it. And I think it sort of deepened my own understanding of beauty, because he was just talking about different notions of it and how for him beauty is not about glamour. It's actually about a greater depth and emerging into like a greater sense of grace and elegance and something that is very rich and deep and noble. So I think for me, beauty has always been notions and moments where I connect to this like nobler side of being a human in this world. And I think therefore beauty is also really important because it reminds us of what we're capable of. It shows us visions of how wonderful a world could be. Yeah, and I think it's a great strength if we have those moments and visions of beauty, because even in times of hardship, we can connect to them and we can remember them. And I think for me, beauty is... yeah, I wouldn't describe beauty as like a certain physical appearance at all. I find beauty, I mean, the older I get, actually, I become very aware of it in nature, in certain forms of art, in music. Beauty is very raw and very alive. And I think beauty is incredibly essential for our being in this world, because it connects us to a greater magic and mystery of life.
I love that perspective that you just shared with us. It's, I guess we live in this world where it's very much about beauty is shown to us, that it's just about the physical appearance, whilst what you're describing there, and correct me if I'm wrong, is kind of this whole holistic and also whole senses experiential dimension to our humanness. And it's something that has been so wiped out of the mainstream for the purposes of marketing and so on. I think you touch on some really important points there.
I think the experiential nature and the connectedness to our senses is also very important. It's kind of a combination of senses or sensual experiences that hide our spirit. I think you can find it in so many things. You can find it in food, in like beautiful ingredients, like coming from great soils and great agriculture. You can find it in great craftsmanship. I think you can experience it in many, many ways, but I think in our mainstream culture, it's become increasingly more rare. Like, I even have the feeling, like, when we look at architecture, when we look to like different ages and different times, there are so many beautiful examples of how people build buildings. And I think in today's world, you can also find beautiful examples, but you also find a lot of buildings that are like new buildings that are just built with efficiency in mind. Like, how can we put the most flats into one apartment block and sell it for the highest price? But I think we have a lot of soulless things around us that are just made for increasing profit. Maybe that's why people are escaping more towards nature these days as well. Because in nature you find beauty in its essence. What do you think?
Yeah, it's like that pure, sincere beauty that has to be experienced. It's not just seen. You know, our Western society is obsessed with the visual, but that's just such a small element of how we can experience things in this world that we've lost touch with. And yeah, I'd have to agree with you that is why, one of the many reasons probably that we feel so connected to nature, because it is beauty in its purest form. And going on from that, and you raise some interesting points around why you think beauty is important in this world. And as you know, as we're experiencing at the moment, our current world is in ecological and societal crisis. You know, we have loss of biodiversity, accelerating climate change, displacement of people, extinction of species. I'm in Sydney right now, and we've had the worst air quality in the world this week because of the bushfires happening all over Australia. Mental illness, suicide rates plummeting up and up. So there's a lot happening in our world. And with that, we're seeing the rise of activism, which is amazing. And we've both been a part of that. There does feel like there is this urgency to do something for the current state of the planet and to take action in order to mitigate and stop and regenerate the planet and do things in a new way. I have a two-part question for you about this. What I'd like to know is, what role do you see beauty having in this transition to a more inclusive and sustainable world? But also, in this time of urgency, I can see that there's a lot of people that would deem beauty as unnecessary to this movement, as something that, you know, we don't have time for, or it's not as important as perhaps going and marching on the street or being part of other activist methodologies. I can see there's a lot of people that would deem beauty as not being as important as those other aspects of activism and action towards a more inclusive and sustainable world. What would you say to those people?
Well, I think it's actually different factors and different thoughts I have about that. I think one of the first things that really drew me to the work of Extinction Rebellion was mainly, like, I think what I was very fascinated by right from the start was the work of their regeneration team or their regeneration groups. And I thought it was very interesting that they had something like this at the heart of their activist movement. The notion that we actually need to connect to our feelings, we need to check in with ourselves, we need to check in with our mental health. Meditation is incredibly important. Kindness is important. The way we are with each other, that we don't blame each other, that we are kind and caring. And yeah, I thought it was quite amazing to have this at the heart of a new protest movement. And I found it very interesting because also here you can see a notion of beauty, beauty as human kindness. So I think when we look at that, this also, how can I phrase this? I think being an activist is hard and it's really frustrating. I mean, I went to the protest in Berlin in October, and often I found myself thinking, why do I have to be here? Why do we have to fight? I mean, the science is clear, the facts are there. Why do we have to protest? Why do we have to disrupt when we could use this time to just start and build a new way of living? It just felt so frustrating and unnecessary to have to get our voices heard for just wanting to save life on this planet, basically. So I think I can really relate to those moments of frustration. And I mean, you experience things that are not very pleasant. I was actually quite affected by seeing people being carried away, brought into prisons, even though I live in a country where that doesn't have terrible repercussions, but it just so worked against my inner sense of justice. It didn't seem right at all. And I think that's where beauty comes in. Like, I think we really, in those moments especially, need to focus on being well and nourishing ourselves and regenerating ourselves, because we need to have good energy, good spirits to keep going and to, yeah, keep our activism alive. And I think what I talked about earlier, I think when we experience moments of beauty, that may be like diving into beautiful nature or experiencing real acts of kindness from another human being, or also seeing beautiful imagery or reading poetry, it nourishes our soul and it stays in our memories. And when we have moments where everything is more raw and more tense and hurtful, we can connect back to those moments and we can remember them and we can connect back to the feeling those moments gave us and the notion they gave us of what kind of human beings we could be. So I think especially in this moment of transition, we need beauty. We need beautiful future visions of alternative ways of living. And they can't just follow the same paradigm of being like purely driven by, I don't know, a gray mind. I don't know what the right word is, but I think, we need to see things and be rounded, surrounded by things, sound, imagery, taste, smells that are nourishing.
Oh, I love how you frame beauty as this necessity for regeneration. I think that's such an interesting perspective that isn't really been talked about very much. Do you have any perhaps suggestions on how this sustainability and activist, eco-activist movement could be more beautiful, could encompass and integrate more aspects of beauty?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think you already do see it in certain ways. I mean, I wouldn't just frame activism as acts of civil disobedience or going and demonstrating on the streets, but also as new ways of living, new ways of farming, new ways of producing food, new ways of producing clothing, etc. And I think we can learn a lot from a new generation of makers, I would say. Yeah, I think it's different things that come to my mind. Like I remember, I guess people would laugh and not necessarily call it activism, but why not? Like this year, a new restaurant opened in Berlin. It's called Freya, and it's the first zero-waste restaurant. It's vegan. And when you enter this place, the interior is beautiful. I mean, just simple, but so well thought out. And they're just really warm and kind. There's always like some very warm music playing there. And their food, like the way they achieve zero waste is they only get things from local farmers that are in really close distance to Berlin. And they just deliver things in like wooden crates. And you go there and you eat there. And it's like a feast for your senses. Because the food, again, is also very simple. It's not even very expensive. But it's just, it's a very small menu. And it's just so delicious. And everything is so well thought out, and there's so much like attention to detail, but all in a very simple like way. So I think for me this is also another form of activism, because it shows us how things can be done differently. In terms of activism, there were moments that I found really beautiful. Like for example, I saw a video of an action they did at Extinction Rebellion in London, and they visited, I think it was the different headquarters of the different oil corporations, but they went with an opera singer and they stopped in front of every of those headquarters, and then the opera singer sang like a message to them. And I thought, I mean, they wore costumes, and it was just a really new way of framing it. And I thought it was quite powerful, because her voice was so beautiful and so, just giving such deep emotion to something that could easily seem just so purely fact-based, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so important that we bring in these other elements, even though we're in a time of terror and great volatility, that we still have these more creative and sensual and experiential elements, because that is part of our humanness. And we've forgotten about this. We've been so focused on rationalizing and intellectualizing and measuring everything that we've left that part out. I also love how you give that example of the zero waste restaurant, which sounds delicious.
It is.
As a form of activism, it's so vital that, and you see this coming up in the activist movement at the moment, that there isn't one way of being an activism or doing activism. Just like you mentioned, it can be through, you know, growing your own food, or just loving yourself can be a form of activism when we're told every day by advertising that we are imperfect.
And that we can find different ways of becoming an activist that also suits our own personality and temperament. I mean, one of the moments of protest that I went to at the last rebellion in Berlin was an hour of meditation. And it suited my own character so much more, like to be sitting in a circle with other like-minded people and just breathe and just be and just hold a space right in front of the German parliament. And I think we need a variety of different voices and different forms. And we are all so very different. And I think we can contribute in very different ways. And that's important.
Yes, absolutely. And like you mentioned, it's so important not to forget how much energy can actually contribute. So coming together collectively to sit and meditate might not look like much to some people, but it's actually so powerful when people come together with a similar intention and slowing down and breathing. How often do we do that in a society that tells us we need to keep going faster, working harder, producing more?
Yeah, and it's also those moments of like heightening our own awareness. And that was also a real moment of beauty, like being at this meditation, and they had prepared like a poem that was basically just kind of talking about how when the earth breathes in, we breathe out. When the earth breathes out, we breathe in. And I had these like thoughts in my head when I was breathing, and I just felt a real sense of connection. And it was powerful. Like, I also at some point, I noticed I became incredibly sad, even though I didn't really feel sad. Like, and then I looked up and I looked around and I saw other people just going through really strong emotions and crying. And I think it was that I could sense, like the sadness, that the grief that we were sharing in the moment. And yeah, that also kind of brings home the sincerity of the moment that we are in right now, but it gives you tools at the same time for staying grounded and going through a moment that is very deep and warm and beautiful.
So beautiful, that experience. Wow. So I'd love to talk to you now about Lissom, which you've been running digitally for, is it over 3 years now?
Yeah, I published, I think, the very first interview in March 2016. I mean, I've been working on it for longer, but that was really the moment when I pressed the button and the first article went online. No idea how many people read it.
Doesn't matter. You put it out there and you've grown a huge following 3 years later. It's amazing. And I have to say, I first came across your work, I think it was on Instagram, and when I was studying my master's in sustainable fashion in London, and I think we'd also met at an event, and I had never seen a platform that was speaking about sustainable fashion in such a beautiful way. that was the first thing that drew me in, the beauty, not only the visual beauty, but the words that accompanied the photo shoots and kind of the energy that was, I guess, translated through the photo shoots and how you put the stories together. You could feel that intention and you can feel the potency of like something new emerging and bubbling. And that was, yeah, that was something that really pulled me in at that time. And it's been so amazing to now like see it flourish into your first print edition, which has just been released. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What made you decide to put Lissom into a print, a physical magazine, and not just keep it digital? In a world where there's currently so many voices telling us to stop producing and consuming, because obviously that's why we've gotten into this mess, our production and consumption habits are through the roof. When we understand the effects of this on the environment and living in this ecological crisis, a lot of us may be feeling like we shouldn't be producing anything new that's physical. Why did you go ahead and launch this physical magazine and not just keep it in the digital space?
I think first of all, we have to be aware that whatever we create uses resources and energy. So also putting out work online uses a lot of energy. Like, I think we sometimes forget and we think that, the internet is just this being that lives, I don't know, independently in, I don't know, space or whatever. But it's huge server farms. It's like so much energy that goes into it. I mean, I recently read an article that says that 3.7% of global carbon emissions at the moment come from digital technology. And 7% of global electricity consumption. But it's predicted that it will rise up to 20 to 30% in 2030. I didn't know that, but I found it very interesting. And I guess I also, how can I say? I think the decision to bring Lissom into print was first and foremost intuitively. I just felt like we needed a different medium for the content we were making. I knew we were putting a lot of like love and work and energy into creating like our fashion stories, the articles, doing a lot of research. It was all very like time consuming and also done with a lot of like passion and love. And I felt people treat online differently than they do treat print products. And I don't want to say that everything needs to go into print. Like, I feel, we don't need to print news anymore. I don't know if we need printed newspapers. I don't know if we need things that are just done in a rush and for the sake of profit, that they should go into print. But I think what I really value about print is like there is a really beautiful slowness and also intentionality that comes when you create something that goes into print. Like, even in our work, I noticed like we were always very deliberate and took things slowly. But now working on this print issue, I don't know, I just felt such a strong sense of responsibility. I really felt like, okay, I'm using these paper stocks now. And even use like very strictly certified 100% recycled paper. But still, I felt like, okay, these were trees once, and I have to honor them with really beautiful content. So there was this real sense of, feeling very deliberate and very responsible creating this. It also seemed so worthwhile, because I have the feeling when people basically consume online content, it's often very like they flip through it. Often they don't take time to read it. It's harder to read online, I think. It's like you don't have the same sense of space and time. And I have to say, now as the magazine is out, I could really witness it. Like, we had a launch party here. There was such a tenderness in which people sort of got closer to the magazine. Like, they picked it up. They almost caressed the pages. They like went through it and really looked at it much more deeply. And I had people come up to me saying, like, one woman came up to me and she said, "Oh, there's love on every single page." And I think we are physical creatures, and then when we interact with something else physical, it just seems so much more real. And I guess I think when I started LISM, it was also always about like really strengthening relationships. Like, I think witnessing the rise of fast fashion made me really sad on many levels. Like, I felt, we're taking something so precious from the earth, we're turning it into something so mediocre, and then we're using it for such a short amount of time and we're throwing it away, and we have no real connection anymore. We don't go into relationship, we don't go into care. And I really miss that. And I feel with the content we are making and with the stories and values and visions that we stand for, print just seems the right medium. Create a print magazine that is really made to last. Like, we used thread binding, so you can open it widely and it will last. It's not just glued, it's like, it's strong. And I hope people will just like keep the magazine and go back to it. I mean, that's how I interact with my magazines that I have at home, like beautiful niche indie magazines that are just as valuable to me as good books.
You're absolutely right. There is a need in this world, and I think there always will be, for tangible physical things that, like a material culture that can enhance our life when it's made through intention, deliberately, like you've created, and with love and reverence for the resources that have been used to create that.
Yeah, I wish you could have been at our opening party in Berlin. It was just, it was a really beautiful moment and experience to see how people really reacted to it. Like, I don't know if I had expectations. I guess I had hopes, but I guess I always had this intuition that beauty is important, and then seeing people picking up the magazine and just like their eyes lighting up, and it felt like a really, really good proof of my thoughts. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think it is going to be something people treasure for years, and it's like a marker of our times right now and of this great awakening, as you call the issue of these times that we're living in. And
I mean, I also think like we decided to also with the magazine take things slowly. Like, I only want to bring out one issue a year, or one issue when it feels right, to really have it as you said, a marker in time, of a specific time, and to print things when they seem meaningful and important. not just for the sake of making a magazine and publishing, but really for the sake of sharing things that we believe to be important and nourishing.
If only all designers and creatives made with that intent and in that way, I think the world would look quite different.
Yeah, I believe so too. I think we are living at the time in which it's our work as creatives is incredibly important, because we can really show people other worlds that could be possible, and we could translate them into like tangible visions. There's one interview in the magazine that they had actually with a dear friend of mine, Becky Burchell. She just started an important festival for climate awareness in the UK. And yeah, she really believes that we have a calling right now. Like, we're living in a time where most of us could picture sort of dystopias, apocalypse. We have quite clear visions of Blade Runner style scenarios, but we have far less clear visions of what other futures that are actually like really healthy for our own and for the well-being of our planet could look like. And I think those of us who have those visions, and yeah, it's important we share it. So we almost have a compass of how to get there.
Yeah, I definitely think this print edition of the Lissom, that's what it's about, this compass and a platform for showing this new vision. We spend so much of our time thinking about the world we don't want, but how much time do we actually spend in envisioning the world that we do want? And so I think that's what you've created there.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, for me personally, it's incredibly exciting, because when you publish, you can actually, it gives you this space where you can reach out to like-minded people whose work you find really fascinating, and you can start interacting with them and go into conversation. They can share their worlds and views and share their knowledge. And I'm very grateful that I can do this work. And I think it's just the beginning. I feel, I don't know, I feel it's been a long warm-up phase, and there's so much to explore. Like, we're right at the start of it all. And explore it with beauty in mind that really draws people in and lifts them up and makes them see, not just read, but like see and feel what is possible, perhaps. Yeah.
I wanted to also ask you, I know we've had a few little chats about this before and leading on to actually creating physical, tangible things, but moving into more your area around fashion. So Extinction Rebellion, as well as some other groups, recently ran some campaigns urging people to stop purchasing new clothes completely. Fashion is one of the largest contributors to carbon emissions, to toxic waste, pollution, exploitation of people in the world. And it's obvious that we need to re-examine our consumption habits of fashion. Do you think these campaigns that tell people to stop purchasing completely, are they useful for us in this move towards a sustainable future? Should we completely be halting all our fashion purchases?
Sure. I think I had very contradicting thoughts about them. I mean, I completely understand the reason behind them and the starting point, for sure. Like, I remember 2 years ago going to Copenhagen Fashion Summit and hearing all the talks about circular economy, new technologies, and just thinking, yeah, but what about overproduction, overconsumption? Could we please talk about that and challenge it? So I really do understand where they are coming from. I agree. It's absolute madness. Like, as I said before, like, I think the way we are in this world as consumers, and how we are also sort of almost expected to behave in today's world of like buying more, almost as if it's our citizens' duty, is quite catastrophic. And it really, doesn't show any reverence to the natural resources around us, like our natural world, and also our fellow humans who are part of the supply chain. So I do understand. And I also agree that overproduction and overconsumption have to come to an end, like this crazy race for growth. But I think the other thought I had was, it just seemed, the messaging around it seemed too black and white to me and not nuanced enough. And I also had those conversations with small brand owners that I know who are really trying to do things in a very different way and who are also going through a lot of like challenges and struggles to work in like alternative paradigms, and who are really creating really beautiful things and have strong connections to their or with their producers, that they got really a bit worried, a bit upset that they felt questioned in the work they were doing. They also felt like, oh my God, the people who are so aware and who are supporting us, they will question it now as well. And we will basically lose our own livelihood. So I personally think we have to look at this with more nuance. I believe that small scale, medium scale, local makers who really care deeply about their designs, who create beautiful products, who really take care of their provenance, who have strong like relationships with the people who produce for them, who care about the resources they're using, they are pioneers again. We need them, because we don't just need to stop with something, but we also need to build something new. At the moment, I'm reading an interesting book called Local is the Future by Helena Norberg-Hodge. And she is basically making the claim that we need to move away from like big global corporations and come back to smaller scale local making that is really connected to the place and the people. Yeah, I think for me it's also a question of not just defining what we are against, but also defining what we are for. And I can completely agree with like buying more secondhand. It's a good thing. I've been doing this all my life. I think that doesn't exclude also like really valuing items made with love by producers and makers who care. I think if we want to change our economy, and we need to explore alternatives, and for me, those are people that are actually showing a new path of doing things, and we shouldn't punish them by throwing them all into the same bag with big and very powerful global super players, because they really are not in the same back and category, and we shouldn't treat them like that. I think for everyone to who has been in this loop of like addiction to constant buying, I think it's a really healthy experience to step back and say, nope, I'm not buying for a while, I'm like stepping away from it. But I think it's also very valuable to move away from it and then go into like a new relationship with a new kind of producer and maker, people who you can also like often reach out to and meet in person and like learn about how they are doing things differently. And I wish through those campaigns, like, these kind of ideas would be communicated more strongly, that a small brand that really cares is not the same as H&M's Conscious Collection. because it really is not. It's also another, I think, education and awareness. Like, I think you can really like learn to touch and feel and experience materials, seams and way of making, like the quality of ways of making. And I also believe that secondhand clothing is just getting, I mean, it's seeping into everything. I remember like in the late 90s when I was a teenager going to flea markets back then. Like, I remember the first time I visited London as a teenager, and I found this beautiful silk Hermes skirt for very little money. It was kind of in tatters, but it was still really beautiful. And I think over the years I found amazing things, but I think it's getting harder and harder because we're consuming more and more just like very fastly made clothing. And now when you go into charity shops, you just have the same sort of selection of your fast fashion brands there. And I don't know if it raises the joy. I mean, another alternative is also making things yourself. And there are just really different ways and outlets, I would say, that we can explore and that can suit us.
What advice could you give young fashion designers, but also designers in general, around making and around these elements of beauty within what they're creating, but still within the realm of responsibility and mindfulness towards the earth's resources as well as humans within the supply chain? What advice could you give?
I would say to them that beauty is a really essential part of sustainability, that when you create something new, when you create a new design of a garment, etc., that you really need to have different things in mind. I mean, you could call it logos, pathos, and ethos. Like, you need to have your rational thinking. Like, ideally ask yourself, like, what purpose does it serve? Like, how can I create something that really fulfills a need for someone? How can I make something that is really well considered, that can play an important part in a person's life? And then also move to the ethos, to the provenance, to the kind of materials and you are using, like what fibers am I choosing? Where do they come from? How have they been grown? What will happen to them during the user stage at the end of their life, etc.? How am I producing? Who are the people who are making the clothing? What is the state of their welfare? Yeah, all these things. But then also the emotional side is super important. Like, am I creating something that will bring joy to people, that will make them look at the garment and go, oh, wow, this is not just useful. This is not just made with consideration, but I'm also absolutely in love with it. This is wonderful, beautiful. It lights up my days. I want to have it as my companion for as long as possible. And I'm excited about it because I think that's an important power of fashion. It's very seductive. It's so intimately connected to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's how do we bring in those elements, keep them going with us on this journey towards a sustainable and regenerative world, as opposed to just pushing them aside, disregarding them. We talked about the Lissom new print magazine a little bit before, but I'd really love for listeners to know how this magazine is different than other sustainable fashion magazines and what your vision with this is. Perhaps you could give a summary, and in the show notes below, we'll put some links for anyone listening that would like to get a copy into their hands as it's now selling.
God, I always find it difficult to sum it up in one sentence. Dualism is there to really look at new ways of how we as humans can enter into a new relationship with the natural world, into a new balance and a new reverence. I would say it's a very soul-driven way of looking at clothing. It combines future visions, but also very sensual experiences. It looks at connections and honoring the process of making, of craftsmanship, of skillfulness, of intentionality. And I think with everything you will see in the magazine, there's like a real sense of depth and beauty shining through it. So yeah, it's a combination of conversations that can lead us into a different future, but then also really grounded with imagery that can make us think and feel and nourish us. So we really, we have a lot of things in the magazine. We have really fascinating interviews with a variety of different people. Like you talked with the Union of Concerned Researchers in Fashion about their really important manifesto that they published. We talked to Judith Terha from Artist Fashion School about the future of fashion education. Again, you had a really interesting interview with Farfarm, who are trying to explore new ways of agriculture for textiles, like textile agroforestry, working with local communities in the Amazon region of Brazil. We talked to Celine Simont, Slow Factory, which like about the link between fast fashion and colonialism. We followed the XR protests in Berlin. You shared like an exciting exploration of your own work, like giving an eco-spiritual perspective for fashion. Well, all our fashion stories are conceptual and trying to explore ways of living or a particular subject. So we have one that is devoted to the extinction of bees and insects, the decline of biodiversity that we're seeing. So we were trying to express that visually. And there's also like really gorgeous poetry in the magazine. So I would say it's a very rich experience. And yeah, at the moment, I have to say, we were so involved in the making of it that only now I'm really starting to look into distribution. I mean, we send off quite some copies already through the Kickstarter, but at the moment, the magazine is for sale on our online platform. And we have a first stockist in Helsinki. It's available at the Tauko store there. We have a stockist in Zurich at Lorem Nord Ipsum and in Tokyo. And yeah, it's it's the work that is lying ahead of me now. So yeah, if you want to purchase your copy, get in touch. We'd be delighted. But also if you can recommend like good stockers for indie magazines or for like beautiful kindred spirit concept stores, etc., cafes, spas, restaurants, anything that relates, please do get in touch. We'd be thrilled to hear from you.
Yeah, and I've definitely put the links to the magazine in the show notes below for anyone listening. You don't want to miss out. This is such an important and beautiful and really like no other magazine I've ever seen before that's bringing these ideas around holistic sustainability and spirituality, and we even have Indigenous perspectives in there, and so it's really special. So I highly recommend everyone checks it out and makes a great Christmas gift if you're gifting this.
Yeah.
So to finish off, Dorte, was there anything else perhaps you'd like listeners to know, or anything you'd like to add?
I would love to inspire people to explore what beauty means to them on a personal level and how it can lead them to a richer and deeper being. Become aware of moments that really resonate and create this feeling of awe. I believe that if we are aware of like the beauty and magic and mystery that life is, we start to treat it differently. We treat it with a very strong and deep appreciation that then sort of spreads into our being, our actions, our spirit.
That's a beautiful note to end on. So, Dorte, thank you so, so much for coming on our podcast show today, taking the time out of your schedule to chat to us. And like I mentioned before, it's been a great privilege of mine to be involved with your magazine, and it's been great. So thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of that.
Well, I feel very, very similar. Like, I don't know if I or we here in Berlin could have done this or work without you, without Amy. It's been a huge inspiration and a lot of really wonderful support. So yeah, thank you as well. It's always a pleasure to get your thoughts and insights and to know that there are, yeah, like-minded people right on the other side of the globe.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this week's conversation.
For today's show notes, to get in touch or sign up to our mailing list, you can find links at the bottom of this episode page.
And if you are new to our community, then head on over to our Instagram at sustainability5.0 and our website www.sustainability5.com and follow along to stay up to date with our upcoming online and in-person events.
If you found value in today's conversation, then we would so appreciate it if you would subscribe and leave us a review. Through this, you're helping others to find these important conversations.
Have a beautiful and wonderful week, everyone. Bye-bye.